You desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you can't get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because your devotional life sucks. Duke, when you ask, you do not receive because your motives are to satisfy your own private pleasures, and they're wrong. I expected James to be talking about my warped, self-destructive streak that I must resist. Rabbis call that evil inclination a yetzer hara. They have an old maid-like game, you know, where cards are sort of matched, then you prepare, and when you get a match, you put them down. You don't want to be the one left with the yetzer hara card. Here's a closer look, the Snidely Whiplash. Somebody at the early service saying, is that licorice in his mouth? I said, it's smoking licorice. I just look at this mean, nasty character. That's what they call an evil inclination that's inside us. And it's stronger than our concept of sin. It has a life of its own. So you have to watch and be careful of your yetzer hara, an infinite array of desires and lusts that rinse you away from God. A yetzer is very animated. It has a life of its own. In Genesis 6, God saw that every inclination, every yetzer of our thoughts were evil all the time. Anything that leads you away or argues in your ear that some other God or some other way other than God's way is better, there's your yetzer at work. Clearing the house of leaven during Passover reminds Jews of the vigilance necessary to resist your yetzer all year long. Beware of the yetzer of the scribes and Pharisees. But how do you get leaven out of dough? You don't. So it's a constant battle. In the film The Giver, Meryl Streep played an apocalyptic autocrat, and she says this: when the people choose, they choose wrong. James would not disagree. Humanity can be divided, says Dennis Prager, between those who know that they have an evil inclination and those who don't. One night, his third-grade son came home and taught what he had learned in Orthodox Jewish school that day. Dad, he said, I learned today that I have a yetzer hara. And Dennis was pleased and delighted, both for psychological and moral reasons. That boy would know from then on that life is a constant battle against his yetzer, with himself, which is the opposite mindset of our society. Canadian culture says that the most important battle is with your environment, with government, with society as a whole. A generation has been raised to believe that the greatest problems come from oppressive forces such as racism, sexism, inequality. The awareness that the toughest battle is within yourself is a defining characteristic of the truly religious person. So when I opened James, that's what I expected to read. And it may be there to some extent. But then I noticed something odd. Starting with the first verse, I had started more or less with verse 2 about my individual desires, coveting, my warped prayers, etc. But verse 1 frames it very differently. James writes, "What causes fights and quarrels among you?" Among myself? That's not right. And then all the way through, the pronouns in this section are plural. It's not Duke, it's you, the group of you, the people to whom James is writing. You as a group are fighting among yourselves for your desires. You as a group spend on yourselves. You don't get what you're praying for as a group because you want to spend on your group pleasures. It's not my yetzer. It's a group yetzer. I mean, there's nobody in here that's not a sinner, right? So what happens when you add all that together? A church with an evil inclination that must constantly be resisted. James is on to something. I shared a secret with Julie. It's actually not a secret because I was talking about it until about 2003 and we got on to other subjects. There's a church killer in the air around this part of Toronto. The list of closed or sharply declining churches is sobering. Starting with Church of the Nativity. Tim, I told you I would mention that. You used to go there. It was a choir boy, Church of the Nativity. Woodbine Heights United Church closed. They destroyed the building, and now it's an apartment building. They combined with Prestine United. They close next month. Woodbine, then there's, which one is that? St. Luke's Westwood, and also St. Andrew's Todmorden closed. They combined to make St. Luke's on Coxwell. I'll refer to that later. The United Pentecostal over on Greenwood. Rogers Presbyterian and the Woodbine Church of God. Let's see, what did I pop up there? That's the one over there, furthest that way, is Emmanuel Presbyterian over on Swanwick. That's St. Clement's Riverdale, All Hallows, and St. Columbus. That's just in this area. Dintonia Park sold their building and combined with Hope United down the street, but the building is gone. Faith Presbyterian, I didn't put them up there, but they've declined to the point that they're now sharing a pastor with Westview Presbyterians. Three Anglican churches closed along Kennedy Road. I didn't have to put them on the map. St. Monica's is still open, but they can no longer afford a building, so they're meeting in other churches that will host them. As I mentioned, St. Luke's Coxwell is still a thriving church. It's a 1950s amalgamation of four congregations. Their pastor at the time wrote of his pain, and this is posted online somewhere. Only those who have had a part in the closing and moving of a church can have any idea of the difficulties which such an operation involves. Now listen for the yetzer, the group yetzer. Of the bitterness and unscrupulous determination of the opposition and the unclined and indefensible methods to which it resorts, the devil is exceedingly staunch. By him they tell lies and blacken characters and write letters to the newspaper and the bishop. Such animosity hints at a deep dysfunction in the congregation before it closed. This is not in my notes, but I did have a conversation with somebody yesterday who said that when their church closed, they went around to a number of places trying to find a place. They did find a good one. But he said it was fascinating walking in. All the churches say they're friendly. I didn't get a greeting. But you know what really upset me the most? when they went for communion, they took their purses with them. If you can't trust the people you're worshiping with your purse. Of course, Gwen Diamond said, "Duke, did you take your wallet with you?" Well, yes. Do you see the level of distrust, even within people that worship together? A yetzer. Each ghost church has its own horror stories. I was wondering, you know, we on Halloween, we could probably just make a tour of those, you know, to trick-or-treating. Particularly that clump right in the middle to the... Many factors make for a healthy church, but even the healthiest is subject to its group yetzer. Now, for those of you who are on the parish weekend, please bear with me. I think it's 168 words that I'm going to be repeating, but I think it's appropriate in this context as well. I described at the parish weekend something called, see those three stars up there in the corner? St. Columbus. You planted three churches over there. I bet you didn't even know that. Marcus Gommel with the ESA Fellowship, Refuel Congregation, that were on their last legs and we gave them a hope, and the various things we're doing over there. We prayed when we started here that we would not be done until we had planted a church. God said, "Your vision's too low. I'll give you three." However, back to the box. To cut to the chase, make this quick. Not every church is like this, but definitely some were, and I know that professionally. Most people start thinking of a church as a building. Its members know how they like things and whether or not they like their leaders, and the basic idea is we get people to come to us. Except, it's not just a box. It's a strong box because, well, we invest in the building and then we have spiritual experiences in the building and so we're bonded to it. We make worship work for us in a way that works in the building. I mean, how many times have we worshiped in a circle here? How would you do that in this space? You couldn't put all of us downstairs in a circle. So this is the format. It determines. We make the building, and then the building shapes us. Actually, most priests really like and prefer the command and control model. I mean, you're sitting there, you're all facing me. So I get to prepare something at home, bring it in, deliver it, and I go home and have a nap. Where's the scary interaction? Not going to happen, not in this context. And Anglicans in Canada in particular were the establishment. And so therefore, people should come to us. I mean, we represent the Queen. The Queen's an Anglican. Come and join the Queen. Oh, yeah, look at the flags. But it's got internal braces as well. Come to our church. We love it. You'll love our church too. Why would they? It's just a building. It's proper church doing it this way, you see. And then the people like what the priest does. The priest like what the people do. And so there's a nice collusive fit. And then you hire somebody like Sean Davison to make sure that you got young children coming along and he can invite new people to the church because it's not sheep who make sheep. It's the shepherd who makes sheep. Doesn't make any sense, but that's what we do. Now, the result of this is that as this culture changes, you can't change. It's very hard to change this. But getting back to James, this is a perfect environment, a warm, moist, and dark petri dish where Yetzirah can grow like mold. It's an echo chamber where you only hear your own voices. So they battle over music, over service words, over sex, over preachers. And when they don't get their way, they kill reputations. They covet what other churches have but can't get, so they quarrel and they fight. And when they ask, they don't get because they ask with wrong motives to spend on themselves, which is literally true. The majority of the funds given here pay for the heats, the lights, and the pastors who serve inside. James was writing to people meeting in homes, and he was still mad at them. Building ownership is the most expensive way to operate it, reducing what's left for mission. Unless, like over at St. Columba's, the renters are paying all the bills. That one's actually free. We have become involved in the public reenactment of heresy, said David Wasdell in 1974. He's writing in the UK. We proclaim a gospel of grace available to all, but we operate a structure which takes the form of a club with limited membership. Interestingly enough, and I didn't realize this till after the parish weekend, that same year, Derwin Shea released the infamous Toronto East Deanery Report. In that report, Derwin Shea urged the 14 Anglican churches in this area to start looking outward. They were all depending on people to come in. The Res, with the rest of the deanery, flatly rejected his report, and it was immediately shelved, as was David Wasdell's report in England. And now, five of those churches are now closed or displaced. And we were almost a sixth. You want to close the Res? Give you the formula. It's really easy. One, live in denial of your group Yetzer. There is something as a congregation you need to resist. All those churches that closed thought they were special. God would never let us close. And they're all gone. Secondly, turn inward and focus on yourselves, on your own desires. In other words, resist the God whose nature is mission. So deny, resist God, turn inward, and life will drain away. Resisting the devil's bargain to focus on ourselves was our most persistent and exhausting challenge. And that's probably the secret. Why did I keep talking about going outside? Because I kept seeing churches closing who were closed in on themselves. So how did you tame your Yetzer? And it is tamed, not by shame. No one accused you of being an adulterous people, as James did the people he was writing to. No, you humbled yourselves before the Lord, and you did it often. And because of the nature of the closed box, we added an additional action for you to do. Instead of focusing on ourselves, we called you persistently to focus on others. Not just with a checkbook or sending someone. No, you went beyond these walls to serve people on your block as God serves them. For 17 years, we embraced an unrelenting challenge to look outward. And we, if you might have noticed, have reinvented ourselves every 3 to 5 years. James and Janine. James and Janine Moffat were part of the original planting team that came from Little Trinity up here. You're visiting with us today. I just noticed you. Well done. Janine was my first secretary here. No aspersions to any other secretary who's ever worked for me, but you are still in my mind one of the best, if not the best. I remember coming in and saying, I had this idea of like the church being a puzzle, but I need a picture of somebody who's like a puzzle, a person, and they would cut it into little pieces. So I went out, did some visiting, came back. She had it done. we had so many people contributing in so many ways to making us strong. Challenge that, humbling yourselves. You let air, you got out of the box and got some fresh air. You got to see what the real issues were out in the community. You did that. You took the initiative to go. And then when you came in, you brought newcomers. And if you couldn't bring the newcomers, you brought their music. Last night, 25 songs. Most of them are songs your neighbors sing. You brought them in to worship here, bringing air in the building and outside. But it was a painful process. I remember, Janine, I don't know if you remember, I think you and James were gone at this point, but we started using the drums that the Koreans left over here. Oh, those are Korean drums, by the way. I remember the comment after we got in the back. Errol, I think you might have heard this as well. One of the old folks who was here just couldn't quite get it and said, "If I wanted drums, I would go to a bar." And we weren't going to take the kind of posture that just kicked them out, because they loved God and they wanted to be here and they wanted to see their church turned around. So slowly we adapted. Sharon Ramsey said at the parish weekend, I hope I'm getting you correct, that this worked because you really do believe in God. Yes, that's what you said. All right, good, good, good. Thing is, all of those other churches would say they did too. I think you draw near to the God on mission out there, and that's why Jesus keeps showing up here. Who else draws near? Your neighbors in this porous church that we have. So, two sermons before I go. This one comes, as James did, with a warning. Be very careful. Retreating behind these walls will woefully underestimate the self-serving yetzer you will unleash. Only pastors who have helped their flocks resist their evil inclination know the depth of the struggle. After all we've done over 17 years, consensus at the parish weekend was that we were just beginning to peek out of the box. This is how hard it is. Virtue, says N.T. Wright, is what happens when you've made 1,000 small choices requiring effort and concentration to do something which is good and right but doesn't come naturally. Then, on the 1,000th and first time, when it really matters, you do what's required automatically. Virtue is what happens when wise and generous choices become second nature. So what am I going to do in retirement? I want to go see what the Duns are doing. Where are the Duns? You know, those people who are done with regular church, but they still worship Jesus and they still follow him and meet together. Where are they? Where are they meeting? What are they doing? It's not that we have to lure them back in. They're learning something about what Christian life is, and I want to discover it. You discovered one way, this porous church, which is really effective and it's working well. I want to see where the Duns are. I have passed on to Julie what you taught me here. And in her good and outward stretching arms, I'm sure you're going to be here when I try to report back what I'm finding. But I don't have much time left. Neither do you. Humble yourselves. I love the scriptures. I love that I look at it and I expect some things and then I get surprises. At the end of the passage, James says, "What is your life? It is but a mist." Well, let's see that. That's you.
here for a little while. We'll drift around and then disappear. That's all you've got. Just that little moment. What James is saying is make the most of the time you have. God loves you and gets all misty-eyed about you, pun intended. Jesus died for you and your neighbors. Jesus lives for you and your neighbors. Julie? The light of God will shine on you so that you may be a pillar to draw other people to eternal life. Be that pillar of light. Amen.